Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. On today's show, we've got another edition of The Deciding Point, our weekly breakdown of everything happening in the Division I college tennis world. Now, quick behind-the-scenes look for all of you listeners. We've changed up our recording schedule here this week. I think for the first time ever at a non-national indoor event, we are recording this podcast at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. The reason I bring that up is not to show off my commitment to all of you in the college tennis universe. No, it's actually my way of offering a massive shout out and thank you to my co-host, partner in crime, and the guest and man joining me to help break down all of this week's Division I women's college tennis action. Of course, I just referred to him as a guest. I shouldn't have, as he is more than anything the returning champion of returning champions here on our Crack Rackets podcast, founder of the No Ad, No Problem blog and podcast, our beat reporter on the road all season long in the college tennis universe. Of course, he's also co-host of These Deciding Points. And my dear friend, it's John J. Parsons joining me for a morning edition of The Deciding Point. Jay, it's a change in the dynamic. So I ask you, how are you doing this morning?
Well, we'll have to see if it is a change in the dynamic because I don't know what a pre-work recording looks like. So you'll have to let me know. Maybe the vibes are better on my end. I'm feeling good, not worn down by the weight of the day, if you will.
Yeah, I would say I don't do a pre-work podcast usually either, but podcasts are my work. So I don't know if anything is pre-work. Yeah, you're fresh. I like that. I feel like both of our voices are still defrosting this early in the morning as well. So as the excitement gradually increases throughout the course of this show, that will be fun, something fun for everyone to listen to. But sincerely, given the fact that we are on the road for what should be my final week on the road until the NCAA tournament, Jay, I appreciate your flexibility. I appreciate the patience of all of our listeners who I know are wondering, are you ever going to be on YouTube this year? Am I ever going to get to see those smiling faces breaking down everything in the college tennis universe? I am sincerely hoping next week is the week. We've got plenty of time to plan. I will be comfortably in Indianapolis in the studio. We should be back to our typical Tuesday 9 p.m. Eastern time recording times as well. So just a little behind-the-scenes look for all of you listeners here to start today's show. But of course, with that established, Jay, let's get into week number 9, another busy week in the college tennis universe. Again, it's early March, so you've got this combination. A few teams making spring break trips. You also have conference play underway in a bunch of different conferences across the country. Thus, just about any sort of storyline you were looking for, it was offered throughout the course of this weekend, and it actually made coming up with this week's outline, kind of difficult for me because I don't know if there were any signature results on the week for us to discuss, Jay. There are certainly some interesting ones, but let's just start there quickly with that opening tangent. Dare I say, for the first time maybe this season, this was a weekend of stability. Like, this was not a dynamic shaking sort of weekend of results. Is that a fair assessment to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think there could have been that possibility with a few teams going on the road and a few teams that we had seen have those sorts of weekends in weekends prior. You look at a team like South Carolina who started making some moves and they might have had the ability to do that this past weekend. But ultimately, things stayed pretty stable. And I think we'll probably see that in rankings. And we saw that with the ITA rankings this week. Not a lot of movement throughout. So, yeah, pretty stable.
Yeah, the term consolidation comes to mind. It just feels like we see teams kind of staking their claim like, no, we are top 8. No, we are in the top 16 discussion. No, we don't have our act together and we are going to play no part of this 2024 season. Again, it's just these storylines that have been burgeoning throughout the course of the early parts of the season. It does feel like they are, dare I say again, continuing to play out, or at least did so over the course of the past weekend. But you mentioned the opportunity for dynamic shaking results. I think first and foremost, the team that had the chance to do that was the Pepperdine Waves, who went on their Midwest swing over the course of the past weekend. You know, considering Pepperdine doesn't play indoor tennis, considering where we are on the calendar. I think if you're the Pepperdine Waves, to come out of a Michigan Ohio State road weekend 1-1, actually a pretty good result for Pepperdine big picture. And again, speaks to like they're in the top eight discussion. You go to Columbus, beat Ohio State. You know, it's that much more impressive if it's January or February, but I don't really care what the month is. That is a damn good road win for the Waves. You know, both matches were extraordinarily competitive. 4-2 win for Michigan over Pepperdine, 4-2 win for Pepperdine over Ohio State. Let's start with the Waves first, Jay. What did you learn through these first two results about them?
Well, had they come out 2-0, they would have been the number two ranked team in the country. So certainly that would have been a rankings shakeup. But yeah, I mean, it's a credit to the coaching staff at Pepperdine and Michigan and Ohio State to continue to do this little tripod that they've now been doing for the last 3 years. I would argue it's much easier to convince Ohio State and Michigan to fly out to Malibu for some early March action. But yeah, it's, I mean, I wouldn't make the trip if I was Pepperdine, but it presents a really good opportunity to get these ranked wins. And it's a tough place to play in Columbus, fast indoor hard courts, not something that these Pepperdine Waves are used to. I came away feeling a little bit better about Pepperdine, and mainly because the 4-6 spots, which had been a big struggle for them at indoors. They only won one singles match at 4-6 at indoors, a lot of unfinished. They looked better. And so I think that that's a good takeaway for them. I don't think there are any doubts that anyone will have over their top three, Lisa Czar, Savannah Brodus, Janice Chen. Yes, I thought Czar and Brodus took a surprising loss against Michigan. Janice Chen is looking excellent. You know how good Chen and Brodus are in doubles. Doubles looking better. I feel really optimistic about Pepperdine right now.
I think the thing that impressed me the most was that, you know, they got singles wins at 4-6 different spots throughout the course of the weekend. The only one to get a singles victory against Michigan was Janice Chen. And we'll talk about the Michigan bounce back in singles here in a second. But you mentioned the strength down below. Like, they take the number 2 and 3 double spots against Michigan. Redelick and Young, 6-0. At the number two spot. Czar and Conway, 6-1 at the number three spot. That's a positive sign for the Waves moving forward, for them to then beat Ohio State in doubles as well, consolidate that point. You mentioned it. Czar, Brodus, after a tough Michigan, had a tough Michigan result, but they looked fine in Columbus, each of them getting wins at the 1 and 2 spots. Redelick, a straight set win over Taya Chavez at 5. You know, again, they still got to figure out 6. There's no doubt about it. Vivian Young knocked out 3-3 by Spencer on Friday. Excuse me. Lily Jones 6-4 in the third over Conway on Sunday. It's progress. Like, they're getting better at that 6 spot. And if they shore up that point heading into the NCAA tournament, you'll just want no part of this team, because you mentioned it. We know how good the top three is. Campana, as we learned in the pronunciations, Redelick, like, they are just so solid at that 4 and 5 spot. You feel like Pepperdine can go 1-1 between those two positions every time. And look, they go 1-1 at 4 and 5. They're going to go 2-1 most likely at the 1-3 spots. Let's do some quick math, Jay. That's 3 points on the board. And as they continue to get better at doubles, and you feel like they're always up half a point in doubles with Brodus and Chen at 1, I was shocked to see this Pepperdine team at 4 in the ITA rankings this past week, because I was thinking, like, have they even played 10 matches? And the answer is they've played 11. They're 8-3 overall on the season. Obviously, look, you look at what they were able to do, national indoors, wins over Cal, USC, wins over Auburn, Florida, Ohio State now. Like, those are 5 really solid wins. I don't know if it's number 4 resume, like, in terms of 5 really solid wins, but I do think big picture, this team belongs in the top 8 conversation. And you weren't sure about that given how few matches they played to start the season. I think you are pretty sure about that now.
Yeah, and they're very well positioned for the rest of the season. And you don't always say that about this Pepperdine team early in the season. You start to maybe look ahead and figure out, well, where can they get those wins? If they do have a bad indoors 1 year, then, you know, how is that going to work? But this year's schedule and the results that they've had. As you mentioned, those are five really good wins that will count towards the end of the season, but they still have Cal twice, USC, Stanford, UCLA, all still in their non-conference schedule. And this year, San Diego, a top 16 team that they'll likely face twice, both in conference and in the tournament. So they have plenty of meat on the bone left to solidify their top eight ranking.
Yeah, again, 11 matches and it's March 13th. And you're like, yeah, but the Waves will be fine. You're absolutely right. Like, they have just steadied the course. They're back on track. They're where they want to be, I would argue, for March 13th of any given season. Obviously, on the other side of the equation, let's start glass half full. Oh my God, what a singles performance for Michigan. And, you know, they've had to do this a couple of times now, Jay, where they've dropped doubles point. That point is obviously still a work in progress for the Wolverines, but for Kari to beat Lisa 3-5, I mean, by the way, that's a little bit of a Spider-Man meme match where it's like, wait, you make a lot of, I make a lot of ball. Wait, you're blonde? I'm blonde. Like, it's just like all these different, like, it's a really, you're a senior? I'm a senior. That was a big result. You know, Piper Charney's just the real deal, and her at 5 to get a 3-set win over the veteran Redelick. It's another good win for Charney, who has been the difference for why Michigan's gone from good to great this year, I would argue, in that lineup, that extra piece just supplementing everything they already had. Good win for Lily Jones, 6-4 in the third, obviously at 6. She's got to beat Jasmine Conway in that scenario, and she does. But, and look, I'm biased. She's like my little sister. For Julia to beat Savannah Brodus 3-3, like, I was texting with her brother Max, who was at the match. He was like, dude, I think my sister's really good. And I was like, yeah, dude, I've been texting you this every weekend. It's just real now. That's an unbelievable win for Michigan after dropping the doubles point in the fashion they did, Dre. They won three games between three flights. They got the message. They came out fighting in singles.
Yeah, this Michigan team is a little Teflon to me in that they've found ways to win all sorts of different matches. We've now had multiple times where they've dropped a doubles point, come back and found four singles victories. They often will find them at positions you would not expect coming into this match. When I was previewing it, I was saying, if you get a win at 1-3 against Pepperdine, that feels like a knockout blow. The only matches that Pepperdine had lost coming into this match, they had lost matches at 1-3. They had lost once. Savannah Brodus lost to Virginia, and then Janice Chen lost to Lucia Pyre of Oklahoma State. That was sort of the calculus. And for Lisa Czar and Julia Fleig to get straight set wins at 1-2, that's stepping up when your team really needs you. So very impressive for them to continue to find all sorts of different pathways to 4 points.
They won this match without doubles, without Gala. Come on now. That's impressive for this Michigan team. And let me just be clear. If you're a Wolverine fan, all you are doing in the month of May is the rain dance. I texted this to you privately. Like, if Michigan is playing indoors, they can beat anyone in the country. Full stop. Period. End of sentence. That is what we have learned about these Wolverines. Now, there's a hypothetical where they'd have to beat Oklahoma State in Stillwater. That's the one team they have not been able to beat indoors. But, like, if it's a third matchup on the season, if it's a fifth matchup in 2 years, like, it would be a matchup worthy of whatever round it would happen in the NCAA tournament. And that just speaks to, you just, like, you can't doubt. I know we still have to move outdoors, but this Michigan team's top eight good, and the resume's locked in. Like, they will be a top eight team. NC State, two Virginia wins, the Pepperdine win, Oklahoma win. Like, we can just keep going. That resume is a lock. So, again, spot consolidated. Where are you with 7-5 Ohio State, Jay? Because, again, that sounds like a less than ideal record, but, like, who are the losses to? Oklahoma State, Texas, Stanford. Now Pepperdine, obviously there's the Arizona State loss thrown in as well. But, like, you know, four of the five losses are to top six teams. They were very freshman-centric. And obviously there's going to be some ups and downs when you are relying on such a young group. That said, like, you know, the freshmen still looked good against Pepperdine. Perry's up 4-1 in the third on Chen. Spencer gets a win over Young. Obviously Taya Chavez knocked out by Redelick, but, like, if this match you lost because Czar beat Kanto 6-3 in the third, like, I know this is really tough to say. Don't you kind of live with that as an Ohio State fan? Like, that's a loss to a top eight team that could have swung the other way. I guess I'm just – the only reason to hit the panic button would be that, like, you could have consolidated a top eight resume the way Michigan has, and you haven't if you're an Ohio State fan. But, like, I don't know if that's a fair goal to like, compare those two by trajectory, because it's a much older Michigan team. And if you're Ohio State, you've proven your top 16 good. Like, you've proven you can hang with anyone in the country. I don't think I'm hitting the panic button, Jay. Are you?
No, not even close. I think coming into the season, we didn't expect Ohio State to have as many of those top tier wins as they do. And it would have been awesome for them to get this win over Pepperdine and take advantage of playing indoors in Columbus. But, you know, there's a lot of new faces on this Ohio State team. For them to have proven and solidified that they're within that, like, 9 through 14 tier, I think it's really solid. Now, the concern is that moving ahead, they have really one more shot at a top-ranked team, which is Michigan, in the regular season. They'll probably get that match again in the Big Ten tournament. But outside of that, then this is where, as we expand the number of countable wins and other teams continue to face top 25 competition, that's when Ohio State starts to maybe lose some ground. And so it feels very similar to past seasons, but relative to expectations coming in, for Ohio State to be here, it's impressive.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see where they end up in the ranking, because, God, if that's the 17th or the 18th ranked team and they're on the road coming to you, like, you're doing the anti-rain dance. You're like, please, let's play them outside. Please, let's play them outside, because this team is good. Like, I agree with you, and obviously to lose Kontos like they will this offseason will really hurt, but if you're an Ohio State fan, big picture, 5 of your 6 are coming back next season. That's going to be a really solid team in Columbus moving forward, so I'm not hitting the panic button. Still, it was a fun spring break trip, couple of 4-2 matches. Michigan knocks off Pepperdine. Pepperdine, the win over Ohio State again. Pepperdine's 4 in the country. It just, I was like, huh? I was like, didn't they lose first round of indoors? They're 4 in the country, but they've earned it. And we went through the resume already. Obviously, Michigan's 2 in the country. I think that makes a lot of sense, given what they've done this year. And then Ohio State right now sitting in at the number 11 spot. Jay, let's move beyond that spring break trip. Let's get into some conference play now. I want to go to a conference I get the chance to cover each and every week on ESPN+. I get to be the ACC czar and... not the ACC leases are, but the ATC TSARs are. I want to ask you about two teams who just have my attention right now. One of them being Miami, the other being Georgia Tech. Let's start with the Yellow Jackets first. Their win over Duke this weekend in Durham was awfully impressive, Jay. 4-1 win for them over the Blue Devils, where, I mean, like, they were just, like, they take the doubles point. They made some switches in their doubles lineup. I actually really liked the switches they made. I'm blank. I think it was Cruz and Roach at 2, and then Bilchev and maybe Nicholson at 3. Like, Kara Lee and Kate Sharabura have been anchors at 1. They're 11-2 now overall on the year. By the way, they're also the two team leaders in singles victories, anchoring the corners 1-6 spot. So those two have been excellent all season long. It's everything else this Georgia Tech team's trying to figure out. Feels like they're starting to figure it out, Jay. And, you know, again, not only their 4-1 win over Duke, but, you know, Crawley beats Kara Lee in straight sets. But had Kara Lee won that first set, man, like, they had North Carolina in trouble in Chapel Hill. Now, ultimately, again, UNC 5-2 winners over Georgia Tech. Tatum Evans ultimately did pull out the win over Mahak Jane, but God, if that would have been the deciding match, Jay, upperclassmen versus freshmen, what a test that would have been for Evans right away. Now, again, her teammate Crawley, who I think ended up as ACC Player of the Week, bailed her out, but, like, Georgia Tech's good, Jay. After the really slow start to the season, they're starting to look much more like the team we thought they might be to start the year. I thought this was a really good weekend. I'm starting to buy some hype. Are you?
Well, they, you know, buy low, sell high. I mean, they started very rough this season and way underperformed the expectations that we are typically used to, and the level that we're typically used to seeing from Georgia Tech. They look nothing like that perennial 16-25 team that we've seen over the last few years. So they're starting to find more form. Kylie Bilchev, who had been so excellent for them over the past few years, she struggled at the start of the season. She's playing a lot better now, finding out whether she should be playing two or three. Doubles are starting to look better, as you mentioned, with some of the new pairings. And yeah, so they look better. They look much better, and they look more aligned with what we expected coming into the season. I see what you're talking about with the North Carolina match. There were a few sets that started to get close, whether that was Carol Lee at one, but it was still doubles and four straight set singles matches for North Carolina. I think the other thing that's huge for them is Carol Lee. Yeah. Carol Lee, who was a NCAA quarterfinalist and All-American last season, top 10 player, really struggled at the start of the season, and now she's starting to play a lot better, even if she's not beating a Crawley, but she's just looking like the player that we're used to seeing. So yeah, things are starting to click for Georgia Tech.
8-6 overall. You look at what they've done in conference play so far: wins over BC, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and Duke. Tight losses at UNC, a tight loss to Virginia at home, a match where they took the doubles point, and then Virginia kind of flexed on them, and that had more to do with Virginia, I thought, than anything else. But yeah, you're right. Bilchev's like 3-9 overall in the season. She's had a really rough year, but you know, those three have come of late. Started to round into form. Jane's solid. Cruz is solid. Sharabura is just making people uncomfortable at 6 right now. And again, like, they feel like it's always good when you have points you can turn to. And for Georgia Tech, they feel good at 1, they feel good at 6, and then again, see where, roll the balls out, let's play in the middle of the lineup. It's an 8-6 squad. I'm just keeping my eyes on moving forward, and for what it's worth, 8-6, they're 23 overall in the rankings right now. It's a solid, solid group. You know who I'm even more confused about, Jay? Their fellow ACC squad, 4-3 Miami. Let me say that again. It is March 13th. We have seen Miami play 7 matches, Jay, and I honestly don't even know what to make of the 7. Obviously, this is a team that had a really rough kickoff weekend. 4-2 loss to USC, 4-0 loss to Vanderbilt in a night match at Knoxville that no one should have ever had to play. Like, God, was that a misery? It was just like after a 4-hour regional final, it was like 10 p.m. and you're not even playing at home if you're either team. It was a miserable circumstances, and Miami looked miserable during the course of the match. But let's talk about them since the start of, what, February? Jay, they kick things off with a 4-3 win in Coral Gables over an A&M team that has continued to improve over the last few months. Then first weekend of ACC play, 5-2 win over Duke, 4-3. We had team match points, loss to UNC at home. Now this weekend, they only played one match, 5-2 win over Florida State. They looked really solid in doubles, you know. Alexa Noel is looking like a number one singles player, all team roster lineup contender come the end of the season. Like, she got a good win at in that match over Vic Allen pretty decisively. I think this match was clinched 4-0. It was a 3-hour 4-0, though, in the end, clinched by Nong Shi. I'm blanking on the name. I apologize. I wanted to say Wang Shiyu, Wang Xinyu. No, it was clinched at the
Xinyi Nong.
Yes, thank you. Xinyi Nong at that sixth spot. I guess all I'm trying to say is, Jay, is I still have no idea about Miami. And I'm starting to look at the resume. I'm like, like, maybe I should be interested. What do you think?
Well, we know they'll be well-rested come postseason play because they really haven't played a lot of matches. And certainly if you're going to lose, go 0-2 a kickoff weekend and not make the indoors. But that kind of had to be an expectation for Miami. You can't bank on making it through to indoors. So it's tough because on paper, it's a very solid team. It's not an outstanding team, but you do feel like doubles has looked pretty good. And Alexa Noel can beat anyone in the country at number one. And Fenning at 2 hasn't been as solid as she has been in the past, but you still feel like she can come up and get anyone at 2 on any given day. And then the rest, it's tough. I think Bach Collins has looked great at 5. You would expect that from her. So much experience. I don't know what to make of the Miami team. But it's going to be interesting down in the rest of the ACC. And it's just tough to play in Coral Gables for sure. No one likes playing there, but they have pieces. It just doesn't feel like it's a cohesive unit. They have a lot of transfers that they've brought in. It doesn't feel like there's a connective tissue that runs between all of these players as much as you see with other teams, which is why I feel like this match presents as just like individual spots versus like, is the sum greater than the individual parts? And the answer is no in this case. So yeah, we'll have to see.
They have 17 regular season matches on the schedule. I like still not going to know anything about them, and I'm going to get to watch them every week come May. And you're right. Like, it's just every individual matchup is a tough out, and watching them all play, I was like, I like Buck Collins at five. I like, you know, again, it's like, I like all these pieces and all these different places. I just still have no idea how good they are. I think FSU is a really solid team. I think that's a top 25, top 30 squad. And, you know, again, given all they've been through over the past few years, nice to see them find some consistency here this year as well. I like, maybe again, I'm overrating each of the Miami, Georgia Tech, FSU, just out of the respect I always offer to a program like Duke, who now has taken three early ACC losses. But yeah, I got no idea how good Miami is. And I just think they are a fascinating squad to watch play in throughout the ACC moving forward. Obviously, the cool thing coming up for them, I believe they're going to be playing at the Miami Open against Boston College on Friday, March 29th. That was announced or confirmed this past week. So always cool to see college tennis incorporated into a pro event. Miami's going to have the opportunity to do that. How good is this Miami team? How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop, Jay? The world may never know. Speaking of how good are you, you got the chance to go to Athens, my friend, in person. You got to see the... No, you did not. You're shaking your head at me.
Coming this week, I'm going to the Texas A&M match.
That's what it is. Well, you are headed to Athens, so you'll get an even better reference point to answer this question for me next week. But see, I can't even keep track. We both got busy travel schedules, Jay. Is Georgia still inner circle good? You look at the Bulldogs this weekend, couple of tight matches, but they were on the winning end. 4-2 win over South Carolina, 4-3 win in the end over Florida as well. Now, again, that match was clinched prior to 4-3, but I think it was clinched at 4-0. Still, like, it was tightly contested everywhere across the board. And, you know, again, I think against Florida it was what wins at like 4, 5, and 6 for Georgia that ultimately separated them. That is not a storyline you would have anticipated going into that match. You know, the 4-2 win over South Carolina, what a weekend it was for the Gamecocks between that, the Elise Mills drama against Tennessee, 4-3. They grind that third set. I think it was Mills, right? Who was ultimately the clinch. I apologize if I'm butchering names here, but what a busy weekend it was for South Carolina. Still, Georgia's yet to have a signature, we look like a top five team who just crushed someone really good moment. And that doesn't mean I'm selling my stock on this Georgia squad that's still working in new pieces in Vecic, in Mert. But they still haven't delivered us a big knockout punch, Jay. And I'm just wondering if that's changed your perception of Georgia here this season.
Well, it's definitely a hold if we're doing like buy, hold, sell. And you can go and listen to my conversation with head coach Drake Bernstein on No Ad, No Problem, because I asked him specifically about this past weekend and what he made of it, because there were no knockout blows in this match, but it's also road matches in very tough places to play, including the Swamp in Gainesville. But had you told me in January that when Florida and Georgia play, one team will sweep 1-3 and one team will sweep 4-6, I would have said, absolutely believe it. And I would have bet my life that it was Georgia sweeping 1-3.
1,000%.
And the opposite happened. And so I also asked Coach Drake Bernstein about Anastasia Lopata, who's 7-0 in her last seven matches. In that same time frame, none of those top three players even have a winning record. And so they've been really struggling at 1-3 to find those wins. And so in that fashion, all of these matches have been pretty scrappy. I also went back and looked at their indoors match against Texas A&M. Exact same recipe. They swept it 4-6. So you teaser, Drake Bernstein has belief in these top three players that they will turn it around and click. And so that's why it's a hold, because you feel like they will. Vidmanova, Riasco, very experienced players. You'll be able to hear my interview with Dasha Vidmanova coming out tomorrow. So I think it's a hold, and I think they have the opportunity to really flex their muscles against a Texas A&M team who is continuing to get better. But yeah, it's a hold right now.
Yeah, well said. And I'm going to agree with Drake that he should have faith in those top three. Like, Vidmanova's earned that benefit of the doubt. Riasco's earned that benefit of the doubt, particularly if she's going to be playing at a two or a three spot. And then, look, Vecic is a freshman. Like, there should be patience always. The superstar freshmen are exceptions, not like the one who comes to mind is a Pedro Rodinas or like a freshman year Fiona Crawley. Those are exceptions, not rules to what you typically see, Jay.
I would also add it's almost the rule when you're going to have a non-American freshman pretty much start in January. Now, yes, she had been around the program the prior season. Yes, she played three matches in the fall, but she was still dabbling in pro events. She didn't play a ton of, she had only played one individual fall event. So really she's coming in January. And to me, that's always going to take a longer time period for them to adjust.
Yeah, but I agree.
She hasn't shown the level that we thought she would coming in, given her past WTA ranking. So there's definitely room for improvement there.
Well said. I do quickly, just 2 minutes or a minute on the South Carolina weekend. They're 19 in the country. Feels like that's about right. Like, it does feel like they belong outskirts of the top 16 conversation. You know, again, it feels like they're staying competitive, and it's not always just Hamner, just Ackley, who's delivering victories for this South Carolina squad. And I do think 10,000-foot view, that's a good thing for this group. Like, they are as frisky as I expected, Jay, in terms of an early season team that, like, they can just give everyone a run, including themselves.
Well, that's the thing that they'll need to watch for. But I do think it's very impressive for them to get a win over Tennessee.
It's a great weekend.
Yeah. But because they didn't get doubles or Ann Ackley. So they found 4 points within 2 through 6. And so for them to do that, that's very impressive, particularly against a Tennessee team that we have talked about how solid they are 1 through 6. Really very little drop off, it feels like, in those matches. And so really great win for South Carolina to get that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, again, even on the Florida side, they beat Tennessee 5-2, knocked out 4-3 by Georgia. They needed this sort of weekend where they were just, you know, again, they get a big win. I know they lost 4-0 to Georgia by clinch, but that match was competitive everywhere. What are the Gators right now in the rankings? They're 16 exactly. That feels about right. Like, they are the bubble team of will they host the first two or not. We'll find out with how they continue to progress through conference play. Still, I agree, it's a stockhold for Georgia. Another team where you're like, how good are you? Maybe they're one of those teams remaining that, you know, on that list. That's clearly the theme here of the weekend in lieu of upsets. It's how good are you right now? And in that spirit, Jay, let's do some State of California power rankings, because it was a busy weekend in California. Stanford 2-0 weekend over Arizona, Arizona State. Cal does the same. We haven't seen much of the Cal Bears either, but that's kind of a theme over these last 3 years. And that was great talking to Amanda Augustus in Seattle. I was like, you know, when we interviewed her, I was like, you know, your team's had, like, it's been a weird 3 years. I feel like you guys have played like 15 total matches. And she was like, oh, I know. She's like, oh, I feel that. But good weekend for them to beat, again, a rising Arizona squad, an Arizona State team that's always frisky. USC, UCLA get wins over Washington, respectively, as well. Stanford's number one in these power rankings. I know that. But Cal, USC, UCLA, Jay, rank the rest of the State of California for me.
Well, I would have a follow-up question for Coach Augustus, and it's like, well, then maybe schedule more matches. Because, I mean, she took this team on the road in Arizona, and they only played 2 matches since indoors, neither of which were very competitive. So I circled that Cal-Arizona State match because that could have gone very awry for them. And thankfully for them, they come out 2-0 on the weekend. But that's something she can control, number of matches. Now, especially this year where there's a little less rainy season and also no COVID restrictions. But all right, power ranking, Stanford clearly number one. I have to lean Cal at number two. One, because they beat USC at indoors, and they got the win over Oklahoma back when Oklahoma still had Arushia, Sherbabina in the lineup. They beat Arizona State. They haven't taken any like bad losses. And then I would go UCLA. I mean, how can you not? We just saw them knock out off USC. USC of these teams has the best win on paper, beating Michigan at home. But that was a Michigan team without Jaden Brown. So I would go Michigan at four.
USC at four, not Michigan. Yes, but yes. Just so you know, rankings wise, Stanford's three, USC's nine, Cal is 12, UCLA is 18. Oh my God, did the Pac-12 need that? Like, that is just a sight for sore eyes if you are that conference, because it's been a while since, and even Washington at 29, like, that is a significant win if you get to beat the Huskies as USC, UCLA did. They're all really talented teams. Like, who do I like up to? I mean, it's tough, man. Like, they're good. Everyone's a really good squad. And you can talk yourself into, you know, again, each of the teams like top threes. UCLA, you probably, of the non-Stanford category, you probably like their top three the most. But, like, you don't dislike Villermuller, Elsola, and whomever is three on that day for Cal. Certainly the USC top three of Charney and Han and, like, whomever is three for them on that day, like, that's a frisky group. They can hang with anyone. Obviously, though, when you have Feng Runtian and Kimmy Hans as your top two, and just, like, again, all the different things they can do, who do you like most, 4, 5, 6? It's an open question. I think I like USC's doubles point the most of the group right now, but, like, UCLA has been for ick. I don't know, man. They're all really good squads. They are all top 16 adjacent. And yeah, like right now the list, there's about 21, 22 top 16 teams. And you just wonder, will the Pac-12 be able to sneak in four into the top 16 by ranking? Again, right now they've got three, UCLA just on the outside looking in at number 18. And yet, to your point, UCLA has that win over USC. The two teams will play again this year. Yeah. State of California is in a again, it's just like football. Pac-12's dissipating. All right, we're going to have one last hurrah, one last massive season before we go, Jay.
Yeah, I think there's a few things that will impact if all of those teams are top 16, or if you do have some of them on the outside looking in, because there's still a path for all four of those teams, really those three teams. We know Stanford's going to be top 16. But one, it's the Michigan win for USC, continuing to like prop up USC. The second thing is how those teams do against Pepperdine. They'll get four matches against Pepperdine, Cal twice, USC and UCLA. If they can feed off some Pepperdine wins, that will help. And then the last thing is,
do you think they need to go 1-3 in those Pepperdine matches? Like, of those four, if they get one, isn't that good for everyone?
That's the bare minimum, because if they go 0-4, then it's nothing.
That's no bueno. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 2-2 would be
most ideal. Like, and they're not both Cal.
Yeah. Which will be interesting to see. And then the last thing is also a continued San Diego prop up, because San Diego beat USC. Cal is facing San Diego. So you want San Diego, if you're the Pac-12, to be as high as possible.
If I added San Diego and Pepperdine to these power rankings, would it go Stanford 1, Pepperdine 2, Cal 3, San Diego 4, UCLA 5, USC 6?
Yeah, but you just make the Cal San Diego match this weekend the decider for who goes where.
Yeah, that's State of California is looking good. Like, welcome back, State of California. Some would argue you've never been missed, but or you were never gone. But I don't know. This feels particularly like, yeah, we back if you're the State of California. And so wanted to offer a West Coast update, since sometimes we get accused of overlooking what happens out there, Jay, even though you freaking live
literally
in the West
here.
Coast. Yeah, so literally our West Coast correspondent, folks. We aren't overlooking it. Rapid fire for these remaining topics, Jay. Just a State of Alabama update, because it is one of my favorite storylines we have in this 2024 season. Both Auburn, Alabama knocking off Arkansas. Good win for each group, 4-2, 5-2 respectively. They each knock off Missouri as well. Right now, Auburn currently sitting at 13 in the rankings. Alabama currently sitting at 17 in the rankings. I have no analysis to offer, Jay. It's just, you know, keep on rolling.
Yeah, it's Alabama State watch. Now, they have done their part in rolling through some of these SEC matches they should win.
Beating although, everyone they should. That's exactly it.
Although I'm not sure I would have said that about Alabama 100%. A month ago. So, 100%. Like, that's still an improvement for them. Now,
the C word, consolidation. It's like it keeps happening.
Yeah, the C
that's
word.
That's the C word you were thinking of.
Yeah.
I know.
You know, we probably overlooked Alabama, to be honest. When we look back on paper, we're like, oh, well, actually, maybe we should have had these expectations. But they're doing fantastic now. We'll see how that translates when we talk about week ahead, because they have some rough week ahead matches, but impressive for both of these teams.
I go the other way. They're not rough week ahead matches. They're finally litmus test matches where it's like, let's see how good Alabama is. Like, if they have a big weekend this weekend, it's not a, oh, they're top 16 adjacent. It's like, no, this is a top 16 group. And again, we'll get into that week ahead here in the moment, just to rapid fire through the rest. We talked South Carolina's 4-3 win over Tennessee. That was impressive. Florida, that 5-2 over Tennessee as well. I saw NC State hit the gas pedal for the first time this weekend. They 6-1 a frisky Wake Forest group. And like, 6-1 doesn't do it justice. That match was over in under 2 hours. It was particularly impressive. You know, Oklahoma State 5-2 over BYU, 6-1 over Texas Tech. It feels like they're in cruise control mode. Like, they're just rolling right now, and they look like the top team in the country. USF, good 4-2 win over VCU, considering they lost to ETSU over the course of the weekend. My go-to team, New Jersey Institute of Technology, tough loss for them, 4-3 to Incarnate Word. That's going to hurt our NCAA tournament chances. Yes, our. I don't know. Like, that's really all I got from the weekend, Jay. Any other results that popped to your mind to bring up?
No, I mean, we've spoken about both of these matches, but I do think it was a rough weekend for Tennessee. Yeah. I think for Tennessee to drop to South Carolina, to drop to Florida, that hurts. Those are matches that they want to be winning. That will probably really hurt their chances of a top 16 bid, as well as just their seeding for the SEC conference tournament, which is really going to be pivotal. So surprising losses for Tennessee, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I would also, I mean, again, Clemson to take 2-4-0 losses. They weren't healthy this week against UNC and Duke. That one was not fun. It just, you could tell, like, it should have been, though, that's a better team than what they showed this weekend. And so definitely a rough weekend for them. One other one, I guess, Baylor women. It's two weekends in a row, 4-2 over UCF. Like, there's just some serious signs of life now for this Baylor women's program. And, you know, again, maybe it just speaks to Grand Canyon's really good, and they almost pushed Baylor to the brink there a couple of weeks ago. But Bears bounce back, 4-2 win over UCF. That's everything from week 9 of the 2024 Division I Women's College Tennis season, Jay. As such, we don't have Cracked Rackets rankings yet. They know who they are that are holding us back here this week. Hopefully we'll get those in today. But we do have ITA rankings I want to discuss here quickly, Jay. Here's what our top 8 looks like right now. Oklahoma State, Michigan, Stanford, Pepperdine, Virginia, UNC 6, Texas 7, NC State 8. Georgia's obviously the team from preseason. Georgia and A&M, the two teams who you would expect to be top 8 that aren't. Worth noting, there's not a single SEC representative in the top 8 right now, but given they're all going to have the opportunity to play one another, how many ranked wins are on the board, you feel like by the end of the season, maybe one sneaks in. That said, like, that feels like the right top 8 right now, Jay. I don't hate that group by ranking.
No, I don't hate that group by ranking. I have a few notes. Okay. One is, I know you were a good student, maybe not as good of a student as your two brothers, but if you miss an assignment, you get a 0. And so I think we need to be very ruthless about these ranking submissions. We cannot come on this show with no rankings to provide the people. And so we need to just set a deadline. If you do not have your rankings in by then, you're out.
Okay. So you're right, but I want to be clear. It's as much my fault as theirs, because, like, I'm on the road and every, like, you know, again, I'm texting them late on Tuesday night, hey, I still don't have your rankings. And there are two people, you and one rankings person, who should not be named, but you know who that person is, Jay. That's always on time. Shout out to you two. Like, you two are the best. Chris is actually pretty good usually as well. It's a process of elimination. You know who you are.
Well, I would just, you know, did your professors always have to follow up with you to get that assignment in on time? I would say no. That's my feedback on the whole rankings shenanigans. I did want to ask you, because you did submit your rankings, I submitted mine. We saw Elizabeth Scotty make her return in singles this weekend for North Carolina. And she was at number one in that match against Georgia Tech, which was a surprise given that she hadn't played singles since ITA kickoff weekend. Where do you have North Carolina ranked?
It was great to have Moz back in our life. I was really excited about that. I have them fifth right now. I have them sixth right now because Virginia beat them. And, like, I can't justify it to the tennis gods to put it above them. I still have Texas at four as well. Stanford's my three. Michigan's my two. And obviously, Oklahoma State's currently my one. Virginia, my five, in case you're curious what my top six looked like. And I know NC State beat North Carolina, so why don't I have them above? Well, there have been some losses for the Wolfpack in the time in between. Now that the Maserati's out of the garage, obviously UNC is a team on the rise. I just need to see them get a signature victory first. Like, I know they beat Georgia, but I don't know how, you know, that was with Brandmeier. It's a new team now, and I just want to see this group get a signature win before I elevate them higher than that sixth spot. I think their ceiling, obviously, is higher than six. I'm just not ready to go there yet.
I had that internal debate, because I had North Carolina below both Virginia and Texas in these past iterations of the rankings. I moved them up. I know you know, but I'll admit it to the people. I moved them up above Virginia. I know Virginia got the loss, but so many mitigating factors there. No Reese, no Scotty. Scotty's back and she looked good. She had looked very good in the fall. Mm-hmm. That win over Connie Ma at like 2-2 continues to appreciate very well. So it is a brand new team when you factor in no Reese Brantmeier here and factoring in a new Tatum Evans. So you have to recalibrate, but that is a massive win for North Carolina to get her back.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, really well done by the Tar Heels. Really well done, by Scotty this weekend. I just thought her level after not playing in that long was remarkable. I don't think that's bad. Like, again, they're always the team that I look and I'm like, yeah, they're too low. But I have to put them there right now because I have a set of principles, Jay, that some of our voters evidently don't stick to. But I try to get that assignment in on time. And to me, that's just where things make sense right now. By the way, the 9 through 16 squads, USC 9, Georgia 10, Ohio State 11, Cal 12, Auburn 13, A&M 14, San Diego 15, Florida at 16. You know, Alabama, UCLA right there on the bubble. Oklahoma's at 21, but they're going to continue to be a team on the rise. I feel pretty good about that 9 through 16 as well.
Yeah, where it gets really tough is, for me, 10 through 16.
100%.
Those exact spots, I feel very good about the top 10 teams. And then the order of 11 through 16, like, ooh, this could go anyway.
Yeah, and again, eventually we're going to have to make room for A&M. It just feels like they continue to ascend. And, you know, if they get a big win this weekend, that will be the big question, is where do we place them and what would that big win be? Well, that's where we can start our week ahead discussion. As I don't know if you heard earlier, Jay, in theory, was in Athens last weekend, but in reality, he's in Athens this weekend. And why is he going to be in Athens? It's because our week ahead has perhaps the premier match of the week in Georgia. A&M taking on UGA. Jay, obviously, I know you're going to talk about it more on No Ad, No Problem, so I don't want to step on you too much, but talk to me about the weekend, what you're looking forward to most in that one.
Well, I think this match will come down to doubles, and I'm hoping that there's a large crowd out there on a Friday night in Athens, because this is a rivalry we've seen in the SEC these past 3 years, these two teams being the cream of the crop in that conference. And over the last 3 years, Texas A&M won the first three. Now Georgia's on a two-match winning streak, having won the SEC title last season and then also the indoors match this season. To me, it's a question of where does the pendulum swing in that top three? I think Texas A&M has looked much better there. They were in winning positions on all of those courts at indoors, and Georgia swept 4-6. I think things have changed a little bit. I feel like Texas A&M's top three have continued to look good. Georgia's has not. And then Texas A&M still is struggling at 4-6, and Georgia continues to get better there. I think Gigi having some good wins, getting the clinch over South Carolina, is a confidence booster for her. So these two teams match up very similarly, and they know each other very well, so it should be a great match.
I'm very much looking forward to that one, one that will certainly be covered on our ESPN Plus broadcast. Another big one, obviously, interconference play, Michigan, Ohio State. Is it a must win for the Buckeyes, Jay? What are you expecting in this one?
I mean, I think it's a must win if they don't want to have to worry about rankings down the home stretch. Otherwise, I do think they're going to worry, because the thing about this is both of these teams, particularly a Michigan team, we probably won't be talking about them much until postseason. They're going to have a pretty quiet next 4 or 5 weeks. So this is it's a must win for Ohio State if they don't want to have to worry about rankings. And also it's a must win for Michigan if they want to keep that top 2, 3, 4, a ranking spot. They could definitely slip.
It's a big match. Again, whenever these two face off, there's always that extra implications. And what am I going to say next, Jay? It's the best rivalry we have in women's college tennis. Do you know what I'm going to allude to? Come on. Don't pull an Owen on me.
The best rivalry. Well, I'm...
Kari versus Kontos.
Oh, Kari. Okay, I was going to get there.
Yeah, I know you were. It's that I got to get the road suit here, so I helped you along. It's matchup number, 36, I believe? Super Bowl 36 between those two? Something crazy like that. Yeah, if they finish, it means the match is really good. That would be my synopsis on that.
We deserve a finish.
Yeah. Yeah. Play it out. Just say, you know what, we're going to stop the other matches. These two are going to play it out, though, because just for the posterity and for the history books, because eventually in Athens, it's going to be in the ITA Hall of Fame.
It's their senior season. They got to finish.
Exactly. Some other good ones. I'm just going to ask you for predictions here. Alabama versus Florida, because we talked about the Crimson Tide. They're at Florida, at South Carolina. Let's start with that Florida match, Alabama versus Florida.
I think Florida wins. It's a must win for them.
Yeah. Alabama versus South Carolina.
Oh, I feel like South Carolina is going to win. I feel like South Carolina wins.
It's going to be a really good match there. Though. What about the Auburn side of things? They've got Florida and South Carolina as well. Do they go 0-2 as well? Are we going to get a 4-0 weekend for the Gators and Gamecocks at home? Which, by the way, these are the sort of SEC matches you dream about being at home this season.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Auburn. No Okotoyi for them. She's in the African Games. I think Auburn will lose to Florida, and they have to beat South Carolina.
Massive top 16 implications in that little quad there.
Huge.
Massive. That's where you're watching this weekend. What about Arizona State at UCLA, USC? Trojans, Bruins going to go 2-0?
I think UCLA gets this win. It would not surprise me for ASU to jump up and get USC. But I'm going to go California schools go 2-0.
I like it. Well, speaking of California schools, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Cal's got San Diego and Pepperdine this week. That's a fun weekend. Your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, very fun. I think Cal goes 1-1. I think the top of that Pepperdine lineup comes through. And this is a really good test for Pepperdine to test that 4-6. But I think Cal beats San Diego and loses to Pepperdine.
It's going to be a fun weekend of college tennis, folks. And of course, Jay and I will be back next week, God willing, on YouTube, 9 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday to break everything down. Of course, Jay will also be on the road this weekend. He is in Athens. He's already talked with head coach in waiting, Jamie Hunt, as well as current Georgia women's tennis head coach Drake Bernstein. He talked with them about their thoughts on the future of the program as well. Again, conversations you don't want to miss. Any other coverage, Jay? You mentioned the Vidmanova interview coming up here. What else can we expect?
Well, it's been Georgia Press Row. You mentioned both of those coaches. Interview with Thomas Paulsell came out on Wednesday, and then Vidmanova out on Thursday as we kind of preview the Georgia men facing Texas. And we've talked about the Georgia women facing Texas A&M. So I'm excited to be back in Athens for the first time since 2017. Take a look at some of their renovations, get a peek at the new indoor facility. It should be a good time.
Looking forward to seeing all of your coverage today. And, of course, always appreciate you taking the time, whether it's 8 a.m., 9 p.m., to join us here on this show. A shout-out to you. A shout-out, of course, as well to the tireless efforts of our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, who, as always, has a f*** of an editing job to do day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout-out to him. A shout-out as well to all of you fans who continue to tune in, not just to our podcast, but, of course, ESPN+. We're three broadcasts wide, Thursday, Friday, Sunday this week. Thursday's just Big 12. Friday, Sunday, we've got Big 12, ACC, SEC coverage on ESPN+. Of course, we also have Big 10 coverage, which started this past Sunday on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel. A shout-out to Archit Suresh, Richard Mai, the interns steering the ship there. That said, though, Week 9 in the books, Week 10 on the horizon. Jay, any final thoughts before we wrap today's show?
Rest in peace to my draft tweet.
I don't know why you didn't tweet that one out. That one was worthwhile.
Look, we all have those drafts that you look and you say you should have tweeted it. You know?
Hopefully there will be another opportunity to do so, because
it was so timely, though. It was, you know, so it really good. Was a moment
in time.
It
was fresh off the State of the Union. Everyone would have gotten it. I know.
I don't know about everyone, but for those, if you knew, you knew, you know, and it would have been good.
Really good.
But I'm glad you got to appreciate it. I had to send it to you.
I was really appreciative that you did. It got a full lol. Like, it was not like, it was like a genuine, like, and Westhoff's like, what? And I'm like, dude, look at this. And he laughed. And so he got it as well. Let the record show. Yeah. Inside Jokes is where we're going to leave this podcast for the fantastic John J. Parsons, our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Jay, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey, great shot.
And we will see you all next week. Thanks, everyone. We'll